Hi, today's April 30th, 2023. This is Mobile's Podcast 458. I'm Tara Gasawar, my good friend, the good Dr. John Wesley. And we'll start off with something non-technical. Today is Military Brats Day. So for my fellow military brats, hope you had a good one. All right, next up. So I thought Windows 10 was supposed to be the end of Windows versions. John?
I really hope so. That was what we were told, was that they were not going to bother with these things. And now we're looking at end of life at some point for Windows 10.
Yeah. So much for the last version. Of course, Windows 11 has been out, 18 months now? It still has a ridiculously small adoption rate. I've only got one device in my home that runs Windows 11 and that's only because I bought a device with Windows 11 on it. Nothing I have can be updated. And in fact, before I retired, nothing in my office could be updated. So I can see why it doesn't have higher adoption rates. But yeah, so Windows 10 reaches end of support. Well, you know, it doesn't say security support. It says, I guess it's this of updates on October 15th. 14th, 2025, so still 2.5 years away. And I assume it's going to get security updates after that.
We would hope. You know, I know a lot of companies have just finished their Windows 10 rollout within the last 24 months. You know, getting off.
So true. So true.
You know, if you're not going to be like Apple and have reliably every year release cycle and not break things as much. I mean, Apple used to break things horribly between releases.
It's usually audio.
You know, Windows needs to go on about a yearly cycle to actually make it so that corporations upgrade regularly versus, well, you know, every 5-10 years we'll do a Windows, you know, we'll get rid of the
massive
Windows version. That doesn't seem to be a 2023 way of thinking. It's a 1998 way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, Windows 98, one of my favorites. Followed by Windows AME, one of my most hated versions.
Well, think about how long XP lived.
Yeah.
People tried with XP and 7 to get them both to live forever, and Microsoft vehemently denied that, even though they're still usable operating systems. If they had gotten security patches and everything else, they probably could be, you know, still in production today.
They should open source Windows 98 and Windows 7 and Windows XP for that matter, you know, so people can continue. I think you were at the MVP summit when we were in the Bellevue, the Washington Convention Center in Bellevue or something, or Seattle. And I can't remember if it was Steve Ballmer or Jim Olchin announced the end of life, not end of support, which is a little bit different, but end of life for Windows XP, I think it was. And there was a roar and a hue and a cry and several bad words from the audience of MVPs. And I think they actually delayed the end of life because of that.
You know, it wasn't a bad operating system. That's sort of the problem. I still have a Windows 7 virtual machine I use from time to time and things like that. They're not bad. They're just, Microsoft wants you to keep out, you know, marching forward. And Apple does too, but Apple at least will do a regular upgrade cycle. Microsoft needs to figure out what they want to do with upgrades and stick to it.
Right. And it doesn't generally kill the entire generation of hardware, it being Apple, you know, when they upgrade. Even when they upgraded to Mac OS, the first Mac OS 10, which supported, I think when all the new Intel machines were coming out by then and the PowerPC based Macs are being phased out, but you could update the PowerPC Macs, I think, for a while. And the Intel based Macs could use, what was it called, Carbon or something like that to run the PowerPC binaries?
Rosetta.
Rosetta, thank
you. The original Rosetta.
Yeah.
Now there's Rosetta 2.
Yeah.
For the transition to Apple Silicon, but the original Rosetta.
But Windows 11 won't even upgrade on, you know, not, well, by today's standards they're getting old, but when it was released, it wouldn't upgrade my 2-year-old machine because it was, you know, didn't have supported, I think the CPU is the problem. I have some AMD Ryzen 5 or something or 7 that isn't supported. I have everything else, but not the right CPU. So that was pretty annoying. Or remember Windows Phone 7? Was it Windows?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, none of the applications from Windows Mobile would run, period. No exceptions, which made it sort of useless for me. And I think at that point, I think that's the point I got an iPhone. I said, well, if I'm not going to be compatible with my Windows Mobile apps, of which I had a lot, I might as well just not use it anymore. I might as well use an iPhone like everybody else. So, yeah, way to go, Microsoft.
Yeah.
And you convinced me to buy an iPhone.
I do wonder, Microsoft, unfortunately, as a rep, for doing better at converting people to Apple products than sometimes Apple does.
Yeah. And you notice when Microsoft execs retire, they all switch to Macs.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. Microsoft is doing better. At least I will say that. I've been happier with Microsoft over the last 5 years than I was in the previous 10 years prior to that. But
I have to agree.
They need to cast off some of those things that made them so crazy in 2000 to 2015.
Yeah.
Where they were, renaming things and killing things. They were like Google for a while. They're just buying and killing things. And,
speaking of killing things, it's not Google or Microsoft, but it's Amazon. They're killing their Halo product line, their wearable lines. I never bought one, although I was a little bit tempted because it was pretty good prices, as I recall. I don't think you bought any either, did you?
I did not. I just didn't like the design. And plus, I don't know. Amazon, I don't like Amazon having any more of my data than they already have. I don't know. I'm usually not a tech conspiracy theorist, even though we've talked about conspiracy theories on here.
Yes.
I definitely know that, if I were to tally up the amount of personal data that Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon all have on me.
They know everything about you.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
But yet, for some reason, Amazon is the one that I trust the least.
Really?
So interesting. I don't know why I have that sort of premonition. But if I had to rank them in terms of, who I trust to secure my data and monetize it, all its worth. Apple's probably number one just because they're so vocal about it, although who knows if they actually are, take their word for it on a lot of it. Then probably Microsoft, because Microsoft's background in the enterprise means they have to be able to, assure compliance when it comes to some of these things. Then, let's see, probably at that point, Google, and then Facebook/Meta. I don't know why, they didn't get dead last. And then Amazon. That's my rating. And I'm not sure why I feel that way. I think it's a lot of just subjective feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. Going with the feels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any rate, the thing about this is, this has happened to, although I didn't buy any Halo products, I have had these, cloud-based hardware products that were just bricked.
Yeah.
Because the devices were still functional. They just had no service to talk to in the cloud. And so Halo devices are going to be turned off on August 1st of this year, 2023. I will say this for Amazon, though, and I give them credit for this. They said, we are fully refunding customer purchases made in the preceding 12 months. Okay, so it's not like forever and ever. But if you bought a Amazon Halo hardware product in the last 12 months, they are going to be giving you a full refund. So you might want to contact them because it's going to stop working in a couple of months. This summer, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and I really wish that when they were to do this, and we'll talk about some of the greatest hits of cloud services that have died. I actually had one recently, iHome. I had bought a bunch of their smart plugs years ago, probably at this point 8 or 9 years ago. And they were all compliant with HomeKit, Apple HomeKit. Okay. They were one of the first ones to the market. And they've recently retired their smart plug, or at least the one I have, but I think most of their smart plugs. But if you had connected them to HomeKit, HomeKit can still manage them. Huh. You can't reconfigure them. You can't move them. You can't add them to different homes or whatever. But if they're a part of your home, you can at least still use them. Now, they're not as reliable as they used to be. I think in the past, having the connection to iHome servers would occasionally ping them and have them reconnect up to things.
Yeah.
I find that about once a month I have to manually reboot them in order to get them to be working properly. But it's better than them just completely dying. which, you know, if you're going to have to sunset hardware, at least maybe offhand it to an open source or offhand it to someone
right.
else that can do it and say, you know what, it's not, you know, HomeKit's not going to give you complete functionality like our app did, but at least it'll still work for a few more years until
right.
you find something better or something you like.
You know, now that you mentioned it, I don't have any iHome switches, but IoT type things, but I do have a Casa, which is TP-Link, and I guess Casa means home, but or house. But TP-Link, I have an old TP-Link, you know, power switch, right? Well, you know, Wi-Fi power plug that is not running, and I had a heck of a time configuring. In fact, I still haven't configured it. I'm going to attack it a little later. It's not critical because it was on something that really doesn't need it. On the other hand, I have a newer, and by newer, I mean like less than 2 years old, the TP-Link switch for my lamp that works perfectly. So I don't know if the switch is broken or if it's just using in an older protocol that's out of support, but I need to go check that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I want to make a note. So you said iHome. This is an old, right? Old iHome. Mm-hmm. Old iHome plug. Not supported. And check my old Casa plug. All right, notes for follow-ups. Yeah, so you know, you live by the cloud and you die by the cloud. And it's something that's beginning to worry me. Even before I retired, I was really worried about how dependent we were with our cloud-first strategy, which makes sense in a lot of ways. But boy, when the cloud goes down, you got no control. You're the what was that study, that ancient study, the executive rat syndrome? Where only one rat could press the bar and the other one just sat there and got the shocks. You know, that's how it is to be a cloud customer someday, where, you know, somebody can press the bar to get, you know, to stop the shocks, but not you.
Well, you know, cloud is an interesting concept. I was talking with a colleague who is kind of the anti stereotype of her generation. She's younger than me, and I said something about cloud. She goes, I don't use cloud.
Wow.
She really doesn't, and she also doesn't use social media for the most part.
Wow.
And I said, so then what do you do for backups on your
cloud?
She goes, I pray that it doesn't die. I said, well, that's not a great strategy. I remind her, hope is not a strategy.
Yeah.
I said, you know, so if you are not doing anything, then cloud, you need cloud for at least some redundancy.
Yeah.
I would never tell you to rely on the cloud unless you are relying on nothing else. Just, you know, the solid state drive in your MacBook or the hard drive in your computer, whatever. Sure. But if you are using, if you're relying on just cloud, you really shouldn't. You know, I think of cloud as convenience. I think that's the way the smart money is on it. And
yep.
I still want local copies somewhere of my data. Now, the frequency with which you make those local copies and how you do them, and if you have a dedicated network attached storage, or you just have giant external hard drives you connect to things, or another computer, an old computer that you keep running and synced up to the cloud storage, whatever, which is also getting harder and harder to do these days because cloud storage increasingly is defaulting to files on demand.
Yeah.
Which is great for bandwidth, horrible if you're thinking it's a backup, because then, you know, you turn on your computer. I remember a few years ago when OneDrive switched over to the default being files on demand, I could see a ton of people booting up their computers every month thinking they were, you know, allowing it to sync and allowing it to back up, and then finding that, no, they actually work. Those files are not on that computer because Microsoft actually at one point did delete all the local files and just do files on demand cloud storage. So yeah, you gotta have something. You got, you know, if cloud is all you got, okay, but you gotta have more than that, and you need to be thinking about these things.
As you may know, John, in my my Swedish death cleaning mode, and no, I've not found any dead Swedes,
don't make sure that they're all gone eventually. You'll uncover all the nooks and crannies.
But in all seriousness, I'm a huge fan of the philosophy of Swedish death cleaning. And one of the things I have found in my Swedish death cleaning is literally hundreds, and I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of a blank, unused CDR, CDRW, DVDR, DVDRW disks with a C. D-I-S-C-S. I don't know why there's a D-I-S-C-S and D-I-S-K-S, but there you go. And that, because that used to be my backup medium. I used to, every week, I used to back up all my photos to a series of CDs, and basically, and eventually got too big for that, and then it was a series of DVDs. And I would go visit my parents, who lived 30 miles away at the time. About a week, every week, or at least, you know, a couple times a month, I would usually take my daughter up, and at the same time, I'd take my CD, my DVDs up, and I would drop them off at their house as my backup, you know, 30 miles away, which is not a perfect scheme, but it was better than, you know, hope. You know, we should create a consumer disaster recovery plan and call it HOPE, H-O-P-E, and make the letters in an acronym for something.
Yeah, you know, you gotta know something. And, you know, one of the cloud services that we talked about, or that we had in the show notes, that I think is a great example, is I've been burned several times on cloud backup.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was both CrashPlan and Mosey.
Oh, I remember that.
From back in the day.
Yeah.
Both of those had this starting you off on all you can backup plans for $40 a month or $30, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then they all, as soon as they realized that cloud storage wasn't as cheap as they, you know, wanted to, they converted everyone over to limited storage, yeah, which meant that I had to delete my files with both of them. Because I wasn't going to pay, all of a sudden my yearly rate was going to go from $40 or $50 to $100 to $200.
Yeah.
And
Flickr just did the same thing over the past year.
It's really to the point now where just figure out how to do local.
Yeah.
You know, get a friend that knows how to do it, get a Mac that has Time Machine, and get an extra hard drive and use that. Just, you cannot rely on someone else's computer, which is a cloud, to not change the rules, you know. And they do that too often. They change the rules midstream. Hey, back up all your stuff to us. Google Photos did the same thing. Back up everything to us. We'll be great. And then they're great until they're not.
Yeah, well, at least Google Photos, if you uploaded it prior to their policy shift, that unlimited still stays. It's just limited everything after that, which, you know, I'm not thrilled about, but I think that if you're going to do something like that, that at least is the least draconian switch. I will say Flickr, which, you know, I think it wasn't unlimited, but I think it was like, there got to be more than a gigabyte. But, you know, it was a lot of storage, maybe a terabyte for free or cheap or whatever. And then about a year ago, they started warning me that, hey, you know, you've got more than 50 photos in Flickr. And so, you know, either delete them yourselves or we'll delete them. And I go, you know what? It's too much work for me to delete them. You just delete them. I don't care anymore. So, yeah, Flickr. There is an example. It wasn't hardware-based, but it was a super popular service that just, you know, couldn't figure out how to monetize. Yahoo bought them. Yahoo couldn't figure it. I think that they got sold off again. But speaking of storage, I'm going to skip down a little. Let's see, where did I put it? Ah, yes, back in 2016, the fall of 2016, PogoPlug turned off its service, and it was a great service. You know, it was a $50, what do you want to call it? Sort of NAS-like system. Didn't have any storage on itself, but you plugged in, you know, bring your own storage, and you plug in your own USB hard drive into the PogoPlug, and they had a really nice cloud service that lets you not just back up to your, you know, your local device, but actually have access to it from the cloud securely, because you would log into their web interface and you could see the files on your PogoPlug connected hard drive remotely, securely. And I thought that was great. They switched to a subscription fee for premium services, and they just said, nah, we give up.
Yeah.
And so that was back in 2016. So I'm like, pink and white. And I think those are the only colors you could get it in. It was a pink and white Pogo plug. It was hard to miss amongst your devices, I got to say. You know, just went down and I switched to other cloud storage services. You know, but going back even further in time. So in October of 2003, so 20 years ago, Microsoft shut down one of my favorite services, the MSN Companion. Which was basically a Chromebook or a Chrome desktop. You know, it was basically IE4 built, if you know, baked into a kind of all-in-one device. I think it, just the keyboard, it was external, and the keyboard had a trackball. You could plug in a mouse. But at any rate, it was basically a Chromebook before, you know, years and years and years before the Chromebook actually appeared. It was IE4 in a box and a couple of apps for MSN Messenger and Mail and a couple other things, news, you know, things that you kind of would want. It was great. It was always on. I literally left it on a little table in my living room, I think, so I could, you know, I didn't have to turn on anything to check the news or browse the web. And October 2003, they shut it off. And the device was essentially bricked. So you could turn it on, it just wouldn't do anything useful. So that was very disappointing.
I should note that for all of these that we're talking about that we suspect will be shuttered or the ones that have been shuttered, we understand the market economy. We understand that these were products that were launched that had no profitability. Investors could not see how they were going to be profitable when they launched. And companies swore they would be, and then they weren't, and they got axed. None of these were profitable, and thus that's why they're gone. So we understand that's how it works. It doesn't make us any more annoyed. Better of love than of luck than to never have loved at all. No, I'd rather would have never loved at all. When it comes to these, don't tell me that you will launch a product that will change my life, and it does in some small way. And then all of a sudden, go, there's not enough people change their life with it. So sorry, and that's not the way the computing had ever worked. It's not companies release things and tell you, hey, you're only going to have this feature for about 10 years or 5 years or whatever. It's probably it will last. It's every feature in computing ever has been launched with the idea this is going to radically change computing forever.
Right.
Some do and some don't. So I get that these companies thought they may have had some road to profitability and then they just didn't. But honestly, if you didn't know for sure how you were going to be profitable, stop launching things that you don't have a plan for. Have a plan. Hope is not a plan. Have a plan and execute on it. And when you shut it down, it should be because there are newer products out there that are better and your customers have gotten there. Not that there's no product that for some of these that replaced any of these. Google Plug and some of the others, there's not a comparable product today that you can go out and get.
And certainly not at a price point. Or ease of use. That was the other thing, I consider myself a technical person, but you didn't have to be one to use a Pogo plug. It was just dirt simple to use. You plug it in, you plug it into your network, you configure it, which was really easy to do. You plug in your hard drive of choice, whichever one, any USB hard drive would do, and it just sort of worked. It was pretty remarkable, but And MSN Companion was even easier. You just literally plugged it in. That was pretty much logged in. That was pretty much it. If you had a Microsoft account of some kind, Hotmail or whatever it was back then, there you were. You're, really happy with your service, and it just kept working. It was awesome. Didn't worry about security or anything because theoretically Microsoft was upgrading the firmware for you. And they did. It was getting upgrading for a while. Okay, and the last one that I recall dying, and John may have to provide some emotional support here, is my beloved Microsoft Spotwatch service, which was turned off on January 1, New Year's Day, 2012, 11 years ago. The Spotwatch was great. I loved my Spotwatches, and they were working great. And, even though the data was only one way, I was pretty happy with that service. And it was pretty reasonably priced. They started charging after a while, but I think it was like $69 a year, which I thought was very reasonable for premium service, and you still had some service even without the premium, but I think it gave you like mail notification, things like that. But January 1, 2012, a sad day, very sad day.
Spotwatch, I think the thing that really got Spotwatch was that it was one-way communication. It had some way where it could receive information over FM, which is how it did receive information, and then send information through Bluetooth to your phone and then back out into something like that. If it had been two-way, it might have actually been a little more viable as a pre-Apple Watch sort of thing.
You know, it's funny because I can't remember. It might have been 2009 or 2010. I think you and I are both at the MVP at a MVP summit in the state of Washington with the rest of Microsoft MVPs. And one of the things we saw at the kind of the open house before dinner thing was the Spot team, and they had a prototype watch that got FM downstream, like all Spot watches, and Bluetooth sync with your pocket PC.
Yeah, now that you're mentioning it, I do recall that we had seen that was where they were thinking of going.
And yeah, and that would have been perfect.
You know, Microsoft, again, could have owned a lot of different markets. They could have owned the smartphone market, and they didn't. They let Apple have it. They could have had the smartwatch market, and they didn't. They let Apple have it. So I'm pretty sure that Apple just follows Microsoft around. You know, goes through their dumpster and just says, what do you plan on, like, chilling off that we could figure out better? I mean, they could have figured out the iPod beforehand. Because they had pocket PCs. They could have had a version of Windows Mobile that had a nice, slick, designed music player and everything else on it. I mean, they sort of did with Zune after Apple had shown them how to do it with iTunes and iOS, you know. Well, people forget how old Windows CE is. You might think about all of, what Microsoft could have done.
You might remember back in 04, 05, maybe. So this is two or three years before the iPhone was even launched, before you even knew what the iPhone was and would be. Again, it was at an MVP summit, and the Windows mobile MVPs were all in a room, and they showed us an app store for Windows Mobile. We thought, oh, this is a great idea. Now, there were already third-party app stores. There's Handango, that's right. Handango and some other places that were pretty good. And maybe they didn't launch it because they didn't want to upset, the third parties that had supported them up till then. But it was a great idea to have a Microsoft-branded or Microsoft-supported app store that, I guess would vet the apps and all of that. But again, they never launched it, and we saw a demo of it. We also saw a demo of speech recognition using a backend server from Windows Mobile before Siri, but before the Apple iPhone.
You remember when we were telling them, why don't you just push out OS updates directly instead of letting the carriers do it, because that's going to be a disaster.
Yes.
They're going, no, we need our carrier partners. And then, they want to work up, push out updates directly and screw the carriers. Microsoft just, it is what it is. That's why I said, I'm happier with them in the last 5 years than I was in the previous 15 before that. Because it was tough being a Microsoft fan in 2000 to 2015. Because you just continually saw things with so much promise. Get continually snapped away over and over and over again.
Or just designed just a little wrong. You know, it's like, you're so close. You're so close. You know, you could have been a contender.
You could have, Microsoft. You could have.
It's not like they went broke.
No. So what is on your death watch list that you worry might be gone in the near future?
Fitbit, I'm pretty sure it'll be dead in 24 months. As you know, Google bought it about a year and a half ago, it's been a while. They bought Fitbit, and slowly but surely, in its Google-like fashion, Fitbit is killing features. I was shocked when I upgraded my Fitbit Charge 4, pretty much died last year, and Google offered a nice little discount to buy a new one from them directly, so I did. And I got my Fitbit Charge 5, and it's nice. It's got color. I think my 4 was grayscale and, all of that, and it's got some nice features. What it doesn't have is a barometer to act as an altimeter to tell me how many flights of stairs I've climbed, which I love that number, and I find it, maybe not useful is not the word, but I find it interesting. And it's gone. It was deleted as a feature of the Fitbit Charge 5, which I don't get. It's not like smaller than before. Maybe they needed more power for the car. I don't know what it is, or for other sensors in it. But I was like, gee, you know, this is a number that I was really interested in. I had, you know, total flights climbed lifetime, and it was in the thousands. I remember my daughter dragging me up to the top of some waterfall in Oregon when I visited her during college, and we got to the top, and I looked at my watch, and we had climbed 92, you know, flights of stairs, the equivalent of 92 flights of stairs, things like that. And then recently, I think in the last couple of weeks, in fact, maybe the last 2 months, they took away the ability for community-driven daily challenges. So, you know, it's just you and a bunch of friends, a private little community, and you have daily step challenges to see who walks the most steps every day. And there are other kind of challenges, but it was really motivating to me. You know, I didn't win all the time, but at least I could see what other people were doing, kind of motivated me to, you know, to step up, so to speak, pun intended, and to get my steps up. And now you can't do that at all. So, and also, this will harken back nightmares for you, John. Over the last year, its over-the-air sync has just become worse and worse. Sometimes it'll take 3 or 4 minutes to resynchronize data. It should already have cached on the Fitbit Charge 5, like, you know, how many steps have I taken so far today? But no, it'll take like 3 minutes to update that. In fact, it takes so long, sometimes my watch display goes to sleep while it's trying to synchronize, and sometimes it just fails. And like I said, it doesn't remember where it was the last time you synced. So it also, if I look right now, for example, on my watch, I can see how many steps I've taken. But on my phone, my Fitbit app, if I go to it, it will probably say, oh, it's way behind. It says I've taken 268 steps. Let's see, and my current as of 9:35 this morning is 2,299. So, you know, it's... And if I try to sync it right now, it's just going to sit there and take forever to sync. So it's just getting worse and worse. I've pretty much determined this is my last Fitbit. And I'm sad because I have well over a decade of data in Fitbit. You know, millions of steps and all kinds of stuff. You know, stairs, which I can no longer do. It'd be very sad. You know, I've still got an Apple Watch, but I still think the Fitbit is more accurate in step count than my Apple Watch. Also, it's a better battery life, so I don't have to take it off all the time to charge it and lose steps.
Yeah, I think you might be right about Fitbit. I do worry about that. I think Google is going to try to put their eggs in the Wear OS basket.
Yep.
And say, if you want to use us for health, you got to use Wear OS.
Yep.
Which, if Wear OS was reliable and it's bulletproof as Watch OS seems to be on the Apple Watch, then maybe that is a good strategy instead of having two distinct parallel fitness tracker platforms for one company. But you're right. Things are supposed to get more reliable, not less reliable. In fact, I was just looking at, I was realizing as you were talking about syncing not working as reliably, I have a Withings blood pressure cuff that actually the syncing has gotten much better in the last couple of years. So I can say at least one thing is going the right direction. Withings, oddly enough, I think is the company that could fill that niche for Fitbit in that they're doing things with some of their newer products that are similar to what classic Fitbit was, kind of the pre-Google acquisition of Fitbit. But even then, you know, your data isn't going to come over. You don't have all that historical unless you find a way to move your Fitbit data to... you know, Apple Health, and then use Withings to grab it or something like that. We just need to have some sort of, parity and some data storage for health data that can move it through all of these systems, whether that be Google's version of health or Apple Health, something. Microsoft used to have health. They killed it because, you know, they had killed of everything that Apple then eventually capitalized on. So... Because if you remember, Microsoft used to have Health Vault.
Yes. You know, before I forget, one more thing that's going to... I don't know if it's going to be bricked. I don't think it'll be bricked. But Google is going to stop support for the third-party Google Assistants. And in my case, I have a... I've mentioned in a podcast before. I have a Lenovo Smart Display, which I love. It is great. You know, it's not you know, ChatGPT smart, but it's smart enough for me that, you know, it's super useful. I always ask it questions, you know, like if we're watching a movie or something, go, hey, you know, is that actor still alive? You know, that kind of thing. or, you know, is some something about a pet, would like to know in a specific thing, what kind of food can this pet eat, that sort of thing. If this one, this particular thing is safe, and it's usually pretty darn accurate. So it's, I don't think it's going to be bricked, but I think it's going to stop getting like updates and security support, which worries me. So I guess Google really wants me to buy the new Google Pixel tablet with dock. Hopefully it's not super expensive. And the nice thing about these smart assistants, by the way, is they're pretty reasonable price. I think I paid $200 for this 10-inch display. You know, with a really nice speaker. And
as we have found out, the reason why they're so reasonably priced is they're not profitable in the least.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's the worry about A word and okay, G word. I think, yeah. You know, maybe it's a plus that the S word has never been all that useful, because the S word was never all the eggs in one basket. The others, I do worry that they're going to start getting less useful or just more expensive because they're not doing what they were supposed to do. Nobody trusts A Word to reorder things directly, and that was A Word's purpose. Tell her buy this, but nobody trusts her.
I do use Amazon's A person to add things to my cart. But yeah, I have disabled the ability to buy from it.
Yeah. I'm not going to trust you to actually go all the way.
Yeah.
I need to make sure this is right before I give you any, power.
What if you sneeze?
It's not good for an impulse buy.
No. Or, you know, what if you just sneeze funny near the, you know, your Echo device? And, you know, a couple of weeks later, a 5-ton safe, which I think is the largest item you can have shipped from Amazon, arrives at your doorstep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that 5-ton safe was made by Corp or something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. Because, S person in Apple always thinks I'm talking to it. I mean, always. It's kind of irritating.
Yeah.
You know, the capital of this country is, I didn't even ask for the capital of any country. I don't know what I'm listening to.
It is always interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, live by the cloud, die by the cloud. Especially when it comes to consumer hardware.
Have your backups ready. You know, don't have any. One of the pieces of software that I find essential for feeling comfortable with iOS is I have software that can do a full backup of an iOS device and then unpack it to usable formats. You know, CSV files for things and PDF outputs of iMessage and things like that, because I don't like the idea that if it were to go away tomorrow, I don't have on my computer a way to get it out in some reasonable way.
Yeah. But with the hardware, you have no recourse, you know, they're just bricked. I think I still have my Spot watch somewhere after all these, after for a decade, it's just sadly sitting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, what the heck,
it's probably with the dead Swedes. You'll find it soon.
By the way, you know, there is a new TV show on Peacock streaming. I don't think it's on the actual, what's Peacock, NBC? I don't think it's on any of the actual NBC over-the-air broadcast, because there's a lot of swear words. But it's called The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, which is the name of the book that the whole idea comes from. I watched the first episode. I wish they would show more about the cleaning process than the talking and human interest side. But hey, what do I know about TV? But with the upcoming writer's strike, apparently, in the U.S., we might see a lot more of these reality shows. So. Yeah. I think you have one more thing you want to mention you got burned by. I see one more thing in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Or two more?
I got burned. Well, I used to like X Marks Bookmark Sync. That went away. That was a fun one. I still got a good way to map bookmarks across multiple browsers on the same machine, right? Wish I did. And Pebble, I used to have Pebble smartwatches, and there are still ways with third-party forks of the original software to get them working somewhat on Android, but not on iOS. An E-Ink smartwatch that was waterproof was a nice thing to have because it's just a low battery.
Didn't Fitbit buy Pebble?
Yes. Or did Google buy Pebble? Okay. So Google owns them all.
Fitbit bought Pebble, and then Fitbit got bought by Google.
Yeah. It's like a cartoon where the little fish is eaten by the big fish, and the bigger fish eats the big fish.
So I would have very much liked to have an E-Ink display smartwatch for times when I, you know, want a backup smartwatch to my Apple Watch. Yeah. But now with the Apple Watch Ultra having a pretty, you know, robust battery life ability for backup, I think that's going to be a future innovation that Apple's able to make where we don't worry about our Apple Watches dying as much. But we shall see. We get burned quite easily with these cloud services.
Yeah, for sure. And, well, I don't think it's ever going to stop. I know the cloud's not going to go away, your colleague aside. So I guess we'll just, you know, get used to it, and then we'll die, and we won't care anymore.
Oh, yeah, then I won't care. I'll be in the cloud. And
exactly. Exactly. But until then, until that sad day, you know, we're just going to have to deal with stuff that just gets bricked because the company that supports us, either they go under or they just say, we got other stuff to do. We're not going to do this one anymore. And oh, and don't get us started digital rights management of songs I can no longer access because the service is gone.
We won't get into that.
All right. That said, you know, still highly dependent on the cloud, and it just, you know, got to get used to it. As I used to tell my daughter when she was little, you know, life's not fair. Get used to it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, on that very happy note, we will bring Movies Podcast 458 to end. And John and I, before the recording started, were talking that Google I/O is happening second week of May. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not looking forward to the Google Pixel Fold, whatever it's called, because the rumor it's $1,700, $2,000 cost. It is way out of my retiree budget. I am looking forward to the Pixel tablet with docking station apparently included. It's still more than I want to pay, and I'd like to pay, you know, no more than $200, $250 for my assistant-type devices, but I would consider it if it's good. I should note that my Echo Show 5 is starting to blink for no apparent reason. I tried a few of the fixes, like adjust the ambient light detection levels and brightness levels and that, but I think it's just aging out after not that long. I think I bought it only a couple of years ago. So I may have to get a new one because I really do like it. One thing I will say that for whatever reason, it's still true today. It's been true for years, still true today. Whatever weather source Amazon uses is way more accurate than the weather information source Google uses, which is off all the time. But temperature-wise, it's off 5, 10 degrees. I think they're measuring temperature in another state.
Mm-hmm. Quite possible.
Or up on a mountain, and I'm at sea level. I'm literally 28 feet above sea level. I don't know what's going on. It's just that Google's weather source is useless. All right. And on those very, very happy notes, this brings our podcast to an end, and we will talk to you next time.